giant robots smashing into other giant robots.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Giant Robots Smashing into Other Giant Robots podcast. My name is Ben, and I'm here today with my good buddy, Derek Reimer. Hey, Derek.
Hey, Ben.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I am good. Do you know what's funny? Do you remember how last week I ranted about how people are, like, when people complain about being so busy at work?
Uh-huh.
I am so busy at work.
Do tell. What's going on?
So the Ruby Tapas Upcase promotion that I have been talking about launches on Monday. We're recording on Friday, so it launches after this weekend.
Okay.
And like any optimistic developer, I set a deadline ahead of time and then started writing the code for a thing. And it's going to be fine, but I have time pressure.
Yeah.
People have to be able to buy the thing on Monday.
Got it.
And we're pretty close to that point, but not quite there yet. So it's interesting. It's I am busy, but it's more like I have a priority that is so high, nothing else can happen. It's kind of what it is, except for recording this podcast. This is the only other thing I'm doing today, which I almost didn't do.
Yeah.
But I like talking to you, so I figured let's do it anyway.
Cool. How much custom work is involved with this? Is it like a full custom checkout flow? Or
So I'm using Stripe Checkout for the credit card bit.
Okay.
So not much. I mean, it's basically, I do want to talk about some lessons learned that I have already from this process.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that I'm really glad we did was include a checkbox on the form for whether or not you manage other developers.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're doing a whole separate flow for those people.
Mm-hmm.
And that hasn't worked perfectly because some people do manage developers but only want to buy it for themselves. And so there's been a little bit of confusion around that. But the nice thing is I know on our launch list who potentially is interested in team plans.
Yeah.
So there are two pages, one for teams and one for individuals. Each one has two tiers, so you have to be able to buy the thing for each of those tiers.
Uh-huh.
Now, one nice thing is that we're sort of separating purchasing from fulfillment. So we're going to charge people and then manually-ish go and fulfill it after the fact.
Got it.
So I don't have to do a full okay, and then we're going to hit a webhook, or we're going to hit an endpoint over on Ruby Tapas and give them this, and then we're going to figure that all out a little bit after.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's kind of where it's at.
Cool. Yeah. Little segmentation is always good for that kind of stuff, right? The checkbox will kind of get you that, being able to at least bucket people into two buckets. So
yeah, seems, exactly.
Yeah,
and I think that's going to work out well for us because it's just a lot easier to write the copy on the landing pages and in the campaign I'm sending people and all that. And I almost wish in retrospect I had sort of A/B tested this, but my guess is that it's going to increase the amount of team plans we sell by quite a bit because we're preparing people for that idea as opposed to it's just kind of like, this is what you've seen. If you're on the team sequence, it's like, we sell great team plans. You probably want to sign up your team. Here's why. Here's some great reasons. Here is something you might want to say to your CEO or whatever about how you want to spend these training dollars. My guess is that we'll sell more than if we hadn't. Oh, I can't prove it.
Mm-hmm. So that goes live on what day?
Monday the 30th, January 30th.
All right. So
yeah. So by the time you hear this, I think it will have been over. Or actually, it's going to end February 6th, which I think actually is when this episode goes out.
Okay.
So if you're hearing this is your last chance.
Speaking into the future.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
Yeah.
Cool.
Your parent company, by the way, released an episode of the Conversion Cast, which is a nice podcast about what you'd expect.
Yeah.
Around doing promotions like this. And so I stole some ideas.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I still need to listen to that, but I've been hearing many good things. So
yeah, it's really good. I recommend
it. Awesome.
Yeah. So other lessons learned from that, as long as we're on the topic. A couple things I wish I had done a little differently. One is that Avdi and I came up with some extras to add to the upper tiers.
Mm-hmm.
So the base tier being you get a year of Ruby Tapas, you get a year of Upcase. And then if people love our stuff and want more, what do we do? And so we came up with some things. And I think the things we added are good. But I wish in retrospect I had emailed folks and had them do some sort of ranked choice kind of thing. Just throw out 10 ideas and say drag these into order of how interesting they are for you or something like that. Some sort of asking people, I think we would have ended up with a better result.
Mm-hmm.
Like always.
Yeah. Generally good. The more data you have, the better you are on those types of decisions. Yeah.
Yeah. My impression is that no one has come back and oh my God, this particular thing in the upper tier sounds amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It's I don't know if we've, I'm not sure we did a great job of making the upper tiers as enticing as they could be if we had done a little more. Yeah.
So people sign up to the list and they're receiving a drip campaign of sorts about what the offer is. Is that right? So there's like a base package, and then there's like other options they can select that are more expensive and include these extras. Is that kind of the gist of it?
Yep.
Okay. So are you seeing less engagement with people choosing those? Is that how you know that it could have been more successful, or
no? It's just based on people's responses.
Okay.
Because a lot of people are emailing me back and saying, "Oh, this is cool," or "That's cool," or "This doesn't work for me," or things like that. But I haven't seen, like, no one has specifically said, "Oh, this thing seems great. I'm enticed by this, whatever." So I just have a sense. It's just a sort of intuition that we kind of whiffed a little bit on those, perhaps.
I see.
But we'll see. Maybe there's a silent majority that's excited about it.
Yeah, sometimes launch days will surprise you, and you'll...
Yeah, I'm really curious to see how it goes, because what I'm learning is that, A, there are so many edge cases.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, in my mind, like, planning this with Avdi was like, this is going to be so simple, like, I can see the whole thing in my head, and it's going to take us a few days, and it'll be a great experiment, which is how I pitched it to him. I was like, I think this will be a cool experiment, we'll learn a lot of stuff from it, and we'll see how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, quickly become a multi-week project that I'm working on it, and I have a designer working on it, and so, like, it's become a big thing. And, like, subscription billing. So it's like, okay, what if I have an existing monthly plan on Upcase and an existing annual plan on Ruby Tapas that was grandfathered into the old price? What happens then? And I'm getting all these emails, and it's like, oh my God. And so I keep updating the drip sequence to be like, okay, this edge case is like we have like an FAQ section in one of the emails.
Yeah.
And I keep updating with all these things, and people just keep finding these new interesting scenarios to ask me about. And then it's like, and then like people are like negotiating, which is like, well, you know, like I got this thing and I got that thing, and so I had this discount over there. So what if we did like 80% of the thing you're asking for that one, and if I signed up for another developer? And I just started replying to people like, that's reasonable, but I literally just don't have time to do this. Like,
yeah,
I wish I could offer you that, but we have to do like what's going to work for most people, because we're trying to do this, you know, kind of quickly.
Right. So it's existing customers who are wanting to take advantage of the discount. Is that what's going on?
Yeah, that's what's making it complicated. Like, Avdi kind of wanted to not offer it to existing subscribers. I did want to, because I'm happy to turn a monthly person into an annual person.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, that sounds great. I hope a ton of people do that.
Mm-hmm.
But it is creating these kind of complicated scenarios.
Mm, yeah, I can see that.
That's one thing. And the other is that I've done this in the past. I just sort of didn't think to do it this time, around doing a partial send of things to people before blasting it out to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Would have been smart.
Mm.
When I sent the team emails, I sent it to like all the team people. Like when I like got the offer together, I was like, okay, we reviewed it a bunch of times. Looks good. I'm going to send it to all these people. And questions came back like immediately, like a very consistent set of questions showed up. And so it's like, okay, if I just sent this to like 10% of people, I think I would have gotten these questions and I could have rolled them back in and then sent the full thing.
Yeah.
So an approach I did know about, but should have done in retrospect.
Yeah. It's hard to know if you're actually going to hear anything back. I mean, a lot of times you will email people about a promotion and you don't really hear much, but I guess in the off chance that there are lots of confusion, it's probably a good idea to do the little test. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In the Lead Pages podcast about promotions like this, they brought on someone who was like the head of promotions. And when I first heard that, I was like, what could this person do with all their time exactly?
Right.
But I'm starting to realize this can definitely be very time consuming.
Yeah.
And also she brought up a great point, which is that under the Lead Pages definition, like a promotion isn't necessarily like a discount or a sale like this. It's anything worth talking about that you kind of want to get some buzz about. Like, hey, we just partnered with this person to offer this thing. We just had a new feature launch, like a major new feature, like we're launching a new whatever. It's interesting. Like, and seeing, like, I would say we've been like fairly successful at getting people interested in this thing we're doing. So we have like 3,200 people on the launch list as of right now.
Nice.
Which is nice. And 800 of those people are on the team variant,
mm-hmm.
which is cool. And so if you have the person and can spend the time, you can get a pretty substantial group of people interested in the thing you're doing.
Yeah.
Which seems pretty worth it, actually.
Yeah. No, that's cool. It definitely seems like when you originally told me, it did not seem like that huge of a project. Like it just seemed like, oh, yeah, I'll just do a joint mailing and
right.
be super easy. But
oh, yeah. And I'm probably overcomplicating it. I mean, just out of inexperience. For instance, like the offering to existing customers was a large complexity thing we could have dodged if I had thought about it more, maybe. But
yeah,
but it's typical. Sounds easy.
Sure. Yep. Well, I'll be curious to see the results.
Yeah, me too. I'll definitely talk about them.
Yeah.
I'm happy to share all the numbers.
Cool.
So we'll see. Yeah, it's the weekend before. We got 3,200 people, 800 team people, and the rest are individuals. And we'll see how that breaks down.
Awesome.
that's basically that's what's on my mind.
That's on your mind. Yeah, cool.
Yeah, what's on your mind?
A few small things to throw in there and what's going on in Dripland. So in this past week, we have continued rolling out more UI updates in the Drip interface.
I've noticed.
It's pretty cool. It's like our first time we've actually done any major overhaul of design within the product. So We came to the realization that it was time to start doing this when we realized that our existing design was starting to hold us back. Mm-hmm. So I think I've discovered like when the right time is to do it. Cause I've always, I mean, you see design trends change over time and, you know, maybe the app starts to look a little bit outdated, but I've always been searching for like, what's the actual, you know, business motivation to spend the time to start putting a new coat of paint on the app. And this became especially apparent after hiring our full-time designer on the team when, you know, he started working on wireframes for this and that and trying to use existing patterns as much as possible. And we realized like, this is not working, you know.
What about it wasn't working?
Well, it's like, for example, we were working on a new settings page for webhooks. So, you know, we have some existing form patterns in place. The kind of the typical pattern we use on a settings page is like a two column layout where you have just kind of things organized in boxes with headings. And that design pattern we were never totally happy with. You know, we were feeling like we should really streamline that a bit. And so when he was trying to build out the interface using those patterns, it didn't look great and it didn't flow very well. And we were feeling like, okay, this is the time when we should introduce a new form pattern, but we don't want this one page to be like sticking out like a sore thumb and not matching the rest of it. So it was kind of from that, like he started building out like, well, what if we designed our form this way? And it looked significantly better. And that's kind of pushed us into starting to apply that in more places. So
gotcha. Nice.
Yeah.
It feels like just-in-time refactoring equivalent for design.
Yep.
Where like the change is painful, so change it so the change isn't so painful.
Exactly. Yeah. He had wireframes for the entire app pretty much that could have, you know, design patterns for forms and for the top navigation and for our sub-navigation. And so we've kind of taken the approach of working top down. So we just started with like just redesigning the top bar and then go one layer below that. And, you know, maybe start introducing new button styles and new heading styles and replacing some of our tabs with like an updated tab style. Mm-hmm. And now we're gradually working our way down. So feels good to get that in there. Definitely feels more modern. And we haven't just stood still for a month doing this redesign. We've kind of like been gradually working it in.
Yeah, that's the best. So,
yeah.
Very cool. I always find it so gratifying to work on projects with designers. As things just like kind of like subtly improve visually and hierarchically and things like that.
Yeah,
I love pulling from master and then reloading the page. It's like, oh, this looks a lot better now.
Yep,
I dig that a lot.
I totally agree.
Is this the first time you've had a full time designer?
Yes.
Interesting. Did you do a lot of part time design before that, or was it mostly kind of you making it work?
It was mostly just me.
That's amazing, I gotta say.
Yeah, we're pretty scrappy there.
But I mean, like, it's interesting that you could go so long without it, and it looks good. It doesn't look like a developer designed the app.
Yeah, I enjoyed kind of splitting my time between visual UI stuff and backend stuff. It kind of keeps me motivated when I can feel like I'm impacting the user experience, but also kind of the underlying backend on it. So,
yeah, well done.
Yeah, thank you. So that's going, and then we also have a couple job postings live right now, kind of to build out the team. So we're looking for a senior JavaScript engineer and a senior Rails engineer to join the core product team. So those will be good positions to fill.
Is the bulk of the JavaScript in the workflow thing?
Yeah, that's going to be the emphasis. I mean, we're really looking for someone to kind of take ownership of the whole application JavaScript code base in general, because that's kind of just been, you know, all the developers kind of touch that, but no one's really kind of taking ownership of it and making sure we're staying up with the latest patterns and everything like that. So yeah, and workflow stuff, there's a bunch of issues in the pipeline for that, just kind of smoothing out the way it operates and adding some drag and drop reordering, for example, into the interface. And so our workflow stuff is kind of maintained in a separate repository outside of our main application code base. And we have test coverage in there and kind of a module loading system. So it's all kind of factored out like a real code base. So,
the workflow stuff is a separate app?
It's a separate code base. Like, we treat it as a library. So you pass in like a blob of data that defines a workflow, and it spits out SVG. That's basically how it works.
Nice. So you want to rewrite that bit in Elm?
No rewrites.
Okay, fine.
Yeah. So yeah, and then the Rails engineer, just, you know, another person to join the product team and work on cool, interesting front-end features.
How many people is it right now, developer-wise?
There's six of us.
And then a designer?
Yeah. Well, do we include the designer in the six? Let's see. I think he's included in the six.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So you're getting to that can't be fed with two large pizzas number,
mm-hmm.
where communication starts to get harder by a lot, yeah. apparently. I've heard.
Yeah, I think that's where the team structure that I kind of talked about last week is really going to help with that.
Cool. That's exciting. Do you take part in the hiring much?
Yeah, so generally what we do is have like a hiring team, the recruiting team at Lead Pages kind of does initial screening of mm-hmm. applicants. And then generally Rob will kind of do a call with anyone who makes it past the initial screen. Mm-hmm. And if they pass that stage, then they'll come into the office and we'll kind of do more of a technical deep dive interview. And mm-hmm. that's kind of the stage where I get involved in it.
Yeah. How do you technically interview people?
Really just it starts out with a list of questions where we kind of learn about what their past experiences have been, what tech stacks they're familiar with. We kind of talk about what's important to them when they're reviewing other people's code, talk about their testing experience and their testing philosophies, and do they practice TDD, and just kind of those high level questions,
mm-hmm.
and just kind of get them talking and see what areas they get excited about and what areas they are lacking in. And that kind of helps us suss out what their experience is and whether they're a good fit for the team.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, if that passes, then we'll sometimes do a test project of sorts. Definitely when we were hiring, looking for designers, you know, we were giving them like a kind of a mock interface for the app and asking them to build out some kind of interface. I found it a little more difficult to come up with a really good test project for a backend developer, just because like, I'm not going to throw them right into our main code base, you mm-hmm. know, during the interview phase, but something that kind of captures their experience scaling a Rails app. So,
yeah. So do you do like any whiteboard problem things or have them write code for you live at all, generally?
We have not done that so far, but...
good.
Yeah. Have you seen that done successfully?
No.
Okay.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a lousy way to interview people. I get emails probably almost like every week from someone saying, can you recommend like how I get better at solving problems on a whiteboard for interviews?
Hmm.
And my answer is kind of like, don't apply to companies that do that. Like, it probably means like the thing is, it's like, it's so common that I can't, like, that's kind of like, that's a pretty flippant answer.
Right.
It is sort of the reality of the situation that a lot of places will ask you to do that, even though it's a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
But I would be wary of joining a company that thought that was a good interview process.
Yeah.
Like, for reference, at Thoughtbot, we do pairing interviews. So we do like an initial screen, like initial tech screen, kind of like you do, to make sure someone's at least at the right level-ish.
Mm-hmm.
But then when someone comes in for a visit, we will pair with them. We usually have two people pair with them each for like half a day.
Hmm.
And we do dive in on the real code bases we're working on. It's like, okay, yeah. I'm working on this feature on this app. Let's work on it together. And it's the expectation, of course, is not that you are instantly super productive, but we find it's like, it's very information rich to pair with somebody.
Right.
You can get a sense of their abilities, even though you need to account for nervousness and newness of the code base and that. I think you still get a pretty good picture.
Mm-hmm. How many of the candidates make it through to that phase? Because it does sound time consuming. Like,
Yeah.
I guess potentially you're the developer on the team who's pairing with them could actually get real work done, but I'm assuming
right.
it's like
yeah, yeah.
a very small amount compared to their normal productivity.
I don't know the exact numbers. My impression is it's not many people get to that phase.
Yeah.
I believe there are two separate, like, well, the sort of like first, does your application-ish thing look like we want to hire you potentially?
Mm-hmm.
Although these days, I think we've shut off the job form for like developers. I'm not 100% sure what the current status is, but we're finding that almost all our hires are referrals these days.
Mm, yeah.
And so that's nice because we skip them a little bit further into the funnel. We don't need to do so much filtering. It's like, okay, we know this person's pretty good based on this other person's assessment.
Right.
Maybe do a tech screen and then bring them in kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, it is time consuming, but I think it actually used to be a lot more time consuming. Like when I interviewed, I think I did multiple days of pairing.
Oh, wow.
Like we used to ask people to come in, I think for almost a week and like pair with a bunch of people on the team before we would make an offer to somebody.
Do they pay you when you're
yes.
in that process? Yeah.
Yeah. which is good. I think that's legit.
Yeah. We've always paid for test projects, I think, for the most part. Yeah.
I think it's a good policy.
Yeah.
It recognizes the value of someone's time.
Sure.
I think it starts the relationship off on a good note.
Yep.
But yeah, I did an interview despite not being interested at another company one time,
because
I was talking about their interview process, and they were like, you should try it. And I was like, all right, fine. I was like, just so you know, like, I'm not looking for a job. They had this weird thing where they would pay you $1,000 if you got an offer from them, like if you made it through the interview process.
Wow.
Like, it was just like bait, basically. Like, we'll pay you $1,000 if we make you an offer, even if you don't take the offer. And I was like, that's interesting. Like, you should try it. I was like, well, but I'm not looking for a job. They're like, you should try it anyway. I was like, well, I'm just going to be trying to get your money. And they're like, that's fine. And so I went through it. And in retrospect, the $1,000 barely made it worth it, because it was an all-day thing where people would, like, two people would come in and we would like spend like 2 hours together, and they'd be like, all right, here's your challenge. I basically like plugged in a laptop into a monitor, and they would say like, all right, here's the problem, solve this thing. Which is like, I would say better than whiteboard coding by a lot, but still was kind of like, all right, turn this binary number into a whatever. It was like these like computer science-y, brain teasery type things.
Yeah.
Like, how many ones are in the binary representation of the first prime number after this one or something? And I was like, okay, fine. You do a lot of this at this job? A lot of prime number work?
That's the thing. Like, when I see the typical like computer science-y programmer interviews, it's like, in a lot of ways, that's what's expected of a technical interview. And yet it's so far from what we're doing day to day. Like, I couldn't imagine giving someone that kind of exercise and that being actually helpful in me evaluating whether they're going to be good on their day to day job, you know?
Yeah. It's such a cargo culting thing, honestly.
Yeah.
I think people just decide like, oh, like this is how you do it. And then everyone else is doing it this way. We'll just keep doing this flawed approach.
Mm-hmm.
Not so good.
Yeah. So our process is always a work in progress, and I'm sure I'll learn some more things as we go through another round of hiring and and all that. So I'll share whatever I learn.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Cool. I think that's it for me this week.
Yeah, me too. It's been kind of a uneventful week, just in the trenches. So maybe we'll have more next week.
Well, definitely, yeah. I'll have a full week of the promotion results to talk about.
Yeah, can't wait.
Cool. It's always a pleasure.
You too, man.
And by the way, I've been in Drip all week, and it's a good app. I keep saying it, but it's true.
It never gets old hearing that.
keep up the good work.
Music to my ears.
Cool. Today's show was produced and edited by the Tom Crash Obarski. If you'd like to access the show notes for this episode, you can go to giantrobots.fm/226. Thanks for listening.